Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. I am not Dave Pezzo. I am Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown is filling in for him with me today. He actually is taking a nice, long, well-deserved weekend with, you know, traveling and having a good trip.
Yep.
So we're filling in for him today. We are both certified financial planners, of course, with Pezzo Financial, and have worked with Dave for quite a few years now, going on 25 for me and 14 for Tom. I'm always going to give you one more year.
Yep, I'm decades, though.
There you go.
More than a decade. How about that?
As always, we welcome your phone calls. It makes it much more fun if we get a little bit of feedback and questions as we go. Phone number is 580-KIDO 54. Wow, it's been a while since I've done that. 580-543-5436. So anyways, give us a call or shoot us an email, jstone@pezzofinancial.net. So Tom and I were sitting here talking before the show, and it's always interesting how it turns emotional, and we always talk about the emotions of investing and trying to figure out why people are so emotional, why we spend so much time talking about that. Well, I would say the majority of my phone calls are not on the numbers. They're on what can we expect in the market? What's going to happen? I'm worried about this event. I'm worried about politics. I'm worried about, you name it, interest rate hikes. Everything that comes in that makes people think about it is all emotion driven. Because if you look at the data and you look at the facts, this is really, and all what Tom always likes to say, the easiest, hardest game you'll ever play.
Right. It is. And you're right. Everybody that's calls is, well, what do you guys think now? I'm pretty nervous after this big downturn. And I just don't, I need some comfort. Please comfort me because I'm really freaked out.
Right. And then why do you spend so much time talking about emotions? Well, it's because it's really an emotional thing. And most people are focused on, how do I prevent the next downturn? How do I not lose money? What are we doing? Yes.
Yeah. What are we changing now? What, you know, we've lost so much money. It must be something we've done.
Yes. And something you should see and be able to prevent.
Yes. Predict. Didn't you guys see this coming?
And volatility is part of this. If you look at any numbers, it never goes straight up. No. But in our mind, again, the emotional side of us say, I have this much money. It should never, ever drop below that amount.
Right. You've have that high water mark and you've set it and it goes down from there. And now you've lost money, even though you started with a lot less than you had then or have now.
And the interesting thing, when you look at December, and that was probably one of the reasons people were so concerned. December was all over the place on volatility. I mean, we had the day Christmas Eve, we were down over 700 points. The day after Christmas, we were up 1,000. Well, why? That can't be anything out there that was fundamentally driven. So it's not that somebody sat down and said, oh, the market's overpriced on Christmas Eve and then super, super cheap on the day after.
Right. And December is usually such a good month for the market. It was something. And he kept hearing about the Santa Claus rally. The Santa Claus rally is coming. I think as far as the market was concerned, someone got to Santa Claus and he never took off.
Yeah. And that's funny too, because we treat the market almost like it's a human being. We talk about it like it has a personality and that, you know, Christmas is going to make it happy or sad, or it's not a human being, but it is driven, again, that's what we're saying, emotionally.
Yeah. I had three or four people call this week and it was just like, you know, I won't recover from this. How will we ever make up this money? You know, I'm lost. I won't be able to retire now. And it's just like, no, it's down a little over 10%.
You know, and the interesting thing too, we did touch intraday on a bear market on Christmas Eve. That's 20%. Didn't close in a bear market because I think it was like 19.8 or something like that, right? So when you think about that, you say, oh my goodness, it's done. I cannot believe this happened. Well, since that day, the S&P is up over 13%.
Yeah.
And so if you would have
everybody sold, knows it's down, but now not everybody's calling us going, wow, it really came back.
Yeah. But they just get their year-end statements. And since the last quarterly statement, because we tell people, you know, just check it quarterly. You don't really need to look at it day to day. Well, if you looked at it in September and then waited till the year end, you're going to think, whoa, wait a minute, what happened? So, of course, that's going to trigger phone calls, and we expect that, and we welcome it because we want to talk it through again and explain the actual data to say, you know, 76% of the time the market's up. So we're going to have these times when it's down, but it pays so well. I get that you can see it every second of every day, and that also causes you to be to react emotionally and try to stop it and call and say, you know, and again, it goes both directions, right? Well, you know, I want to make so much money before I retire. Is there a good high risk investment out there? But I want to get rid of my equity income mutual fund. But can you buy me pot stocks or Bitcoin? So it's such an emotional thing. It's so strange to me how the mind works.
It's interesting also that if there was a game in a casino and it paid 76% of the time, you would never get to play it because there'd be so many people playing it.
Yep.
It would be standing room only trying to play that. But you have this something that's completely legal that's everywhere, and people will run away from it as much as they can.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if it was also so easy that you didn't even have to think, you wouldn't even have to be dealt a card. You could just stand there and watch.
Right. You just put the money out and then you could just, I'm going to go back to the hotel room and
not pay attention.
Tell me when I won.
And that probably would be the best way to invest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when people are more, and again, this is another question I actually received this week is maybe I should just get completely out of the market and buy property. Well, real estate goes up and down as well. Plus it's not liquid. Plus, you have so many other things that come with being a landlord that most people don't want, because you can own real estate investments through mutual funds and never have to shovel a sidewalk.
Mm-hmm. And also in real estate is that it's still, you know, real estate is location, location, location. Just because you're buying real estate in general doesn't make it a good investment.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know anything about buying real estate, you might as well buy Bitcoin. I have no idea how that works either.
Right.
People just have this general feeling because they can go and, you know, touch it and have this, and it has this history that, oh yeah, I buy real estate. So-and-so made so much billions in real estate. Everybody makes money in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
2008, a lot of people didn't make money in real estate and they couldn't sell it either.
I think most of our really tragic wealth losing stories have been about property. A lot of people did think they were going to be missing out. And that's the fear of missing out is a big deal with any type of investment. But they bought a house and they expected to be able to flip it within a year or so, which means you buy it for cheap, fix it up, flip it. Or they bought a more expensive house for themselves and were going to sell theirs. So pretty soon they end up carrying two homes and using their investments to make the payment.
Mm-hmm.
And then they end up with a house that they can no longer afford the payment. They've used up almost all of their their investments. And they're stuck with two houses that aren't worth anything to them anymore.
Right. And people have their head in the sand a lot of times with especially rentals. I have met quite a few people doing taxes that have rental real estate. And my first question when I hear that they have it, I go, is it cash flowing?
Mm-hmm.
And they go, oh, well, yeah, it's really good. Well, we have to put about $200 or $300 a month into it. But it's really good. And
someone's making my payment.
Yeah. I don't know of any investments or mutual funds that we have that say, hey, by the way, you have to put in another $200 a month just to
break even, to
keep this going.
Yeah.
You know, it has to happen. You know, you can put in more, but in this case, we're having to, because the business is losing money. And real estate, rental real estate, all this is a business. And you got to go into it as a business. And if you're having to put your own capital into it all the time, that means you're losing money.
Right. And then a lot of times you don't have that cushion built up. But if something goes wrong, and it will. I know everyone says, well, not if you buy houses right. You buy a new house, then you don't have to worry about the roof and you don't worry about the furnace. Well, anybody that's bought a new house also realizes there are issues with those as well. Things break, or people don't treat them well.
Or people will break them.
Correct. Right. And so then you end up stuck with something that you have to cash flow more than just above the payment.
Right.
So it is impossible, and that's the one thing I want to say one more time, back to the emotional side of this. It is impossible to time the market.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to sell out on Christmas Eve because you finally were so fearful that you just couldn't do it and you're going to wait till the market settles down and then get back in, or waits for it to, I don't know, correct a bit more. Well, since Christmas Eve being up 13.2, when would you have gotten in?
Right.
And what would have triggered it?
You wouldn't have. And then you're going to sit here and then you have deer in the headlights because you're sitting there going, well, okay, maybe it's going to go down again because this, you know, this government shutdown is going to be a big deal. So I'll get back in when it goes down again. Oh, it didn't go down. Well, maybe I should. Oh, no. And then it's 6 months later, then it's a year later because you're waiting for this perfect time and there won't be a perfect time.
And you know, and if you just leave, one of my absolute favorite charts is the one where you just put money in and you turn your head and forget about it. He put $10,000 in the S&P in 1998. And since then, if we remember, we had the tech bubble pop. We had September 11th, real estate financial crisis. We've had a lot of negative things happen since 1998. Mm-hmm. And during that time, if you just put it in the S&P, left it alone, a $10,000 investment would turn to 40.
Right.
That's not such an impressive number as if you would have missed the 10 best days during that period of time. And those days tend to happen after the worst, as we mm-hmm. see recently here in December. 10 best days, your return gets cut in half. Your 10 turns to 20. You think about 10 days over 20 years. That seems an irrelevant number of days, correct? But if you miss those and you don't know when they're going to happen, just like this year, how in the world can you get this right?
Yeah. And you get this, the age old thing. Well, this time it's different. It's different now than it was then. Well, I don't know if it's a lot. I think it's a lot better now mm-hmm. than it was then. You don't have in 2000, 2001, late 90s, you don't have stocks that have no financial, even aren't even generating any income whatsoever, selling for over $100 a share.
Right.
Completely almost mythical.
And when you talk about it, Air.com was a legit company with no finances, and it IPO'd, which means it went public and went to the moon, and people are excited. And well, when it popped, they're shocked. Well, you still got to do your research, right? And know what you're buying.
Right. And then and we haven't had, and again, it could happen anytime, but yeah, haven't had a severe terrorist attack like we did in September 11th. We don't have leverage in the system like we did in 2008. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great things that are now that weren't then. And so you kind of look at these things and you go, wow, things are pretty good right now.
And we make it through these. We always forget what they were at the time as you were living through them, but we make it through and we grow on.
Right.
So we're going to take our first break. First, Tom and I have so much to cover this hour. It's crazy. We're going to have two people join us at the top of the next hour, and they're special guests that we're excited for. But at this time, give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Before we go on, we're going to take a call, but my name is Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Pezzo this morning. Please give us calls at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Morning, Jennifer and Tom. How's it going?
Good. Hi, Jim. Good, good. How about you?
Oh, fine, thanks. Just as your intro music was playing this morning, I was thinking to myself, it's just about time for Jennifer and Tom to come back.
Well, we were thinking that, too.
I just said that, too. I said, this is Jim's kind of music. I'm sure that he's going to be calling.
No, actually, the music is too placid for me, basically, but, you know, I prefer a nice drum cadence and maybe a march, but, yeah. You know.
Oh, and not the Who or AC/DC?
No. No, the only cool music I got into was Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's good.
Otherwise, back in the 70s, my favorites were The Carpenters and John Denver.
Yeah, The Carpenters and
Brad.
Yeah,
that's pretty mellow for sure.
Yeah.
Well, The Carpenters were about relationships, and John Denver was about nature.
Yep.
Okay, so nice, relaxing music.
Anyway, how have things been going with you all?
Very good. Yep, I had to drag Tom in here before tax season starts because we don't see him, and his family gets first dibs, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes, Tom, well, I hear they've done something with the old, the Trump tax cut. Mm-hmm. I wonder how that's going to go.
Oh, we'll talk about it. It's on our list.
It's actually in the second half hour. In about 15 minutes, we'll be talking about that.
Yep.
Well, things are going good with me, and I don't know. Things are up and down. I bought about $60,000 worth of stocks this last year.
Good.
And you know, you were talking about people getting out, getting in, wondering when. Well, what I've done, you know, if there's a stock I like, put a buy order on it, right?
Uh-huh.
At what you think would be good. Like, for instance, it goes up, you wonder if it'll come down again. Just, you know, don't worry about that. Put a buy order on it, and then it works for itself.
Right.
If it goes down again, then the trigger is pulled, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even better if you just dollar cost average in, which means you say, you know what, I'm going to put $1,000 a month into something, and I don't really care what the market's doing. That works out well for people too.
Well, most people do that with mutual funds.
Right. Yep.
But you know, I find it's so exciting. I mean, I like to buy the individual stock.
Yeah.
But one thing I was going to mention, you know, in today's mad world with social media. Mm-hmm. I heard a couple of words. It was a phrase that I think explains it all. It's simulated significance. And people, they in today's world, they feel totally insignificant. So they get on Facebook, they think that the rest of the world should give a damn about them, you know?
Oh, yeah. I read something about that, too.
So it's simulated significance. And yeah. In town now, there's a company that actually goes into charging for hugs.
Oh, we saw that.
Oh, yeah,
that's
saw
creepy.
That is weird.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's creepy. Yeah. I don't want a hug from a stranger.
Let's face it, it is prostitution without the sex. I mean,
well, maybe it would cross that line eventually.
Top.
That is the sad state of affair. I mean, we've got all sorts of technology, but, you know, we need humanists. But Tom said something I remembered from a long time ago. Well, he said not that long, but it was, we have all sorts of comfort, but we're not comfortable.
Well, of course I said that. That sounds like me.
That does. I don't remember that, but I'll give him credit.
I appreciate Jim, and I'll take credit for it.
Yeah, very philosophical.
Well,
that's what we usually say with Tom.
One interesting kind of a question. I was listening to Glenn Beck the other day, and I know that in the past he's pushed gold. But anyway, he was talking about, like, world currencies devalue. And I know that that happens here and there for whatever economic reason. And then he went into Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Bitcoin is, you know, asinine. But then again, it's the same thing as gold. I mean, neither one of them produce anything. And for some reason, people think they're worth something.
Right.
And, but,
and I think that he tends to sell whatever he's selling at the time. So he gets a sponsorship, and that's when he starts to talk about it.
I know. To me, and I've gotten a few of the guy's books, you know, to me that kind of, when he does something like that, it kind of lowers the credibility in my eyes.
Yeah.
But
a lot of those guys do that. Yep.
But I was just wondering if something like Bitcoin would be any kind of a hedge whatsoever against the devaluation of currency.
No, not at this time, because there isn't any ready market for it against any other currencies. It's basically out there trading in a vacuum, kind of sort of tied to dollars, but you can't really, it's unregulated, so you don't really have that ability to say it's a hedge. And talk about a downturn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was down over 80% last year. You know, we thought people were scared about the stock market.
Yeah, you buy that and hold on. It's not anything where near like a dollar.
Right.
Well, you know, I mean, people do need some education in economics and accounting and knowing, you know, an asset is worth something and income is worth something. And, you know, you might as well invest in baseball cards, you know, and hope the price goes up.
Well, it'd be
up.
A lot more fun, and you can touch baseball cards.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I shan't take any too much more of your time. Have a great 2019.
Thanks, Jim. You too. And we'll probably talk to you here in a couple of months when we're back on, okay?
Yep. Look forward to it.
2019 is so odd, though, you know? It's an odd year.
It is.
Well, anyway, take care and happy investing.
Thanks, Jim. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. So, again, we want phone calls. They're so much more fun with the program. So, 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or you can email us. I'm just using my email because it's on my phone and easy to pull up, which is jstone@petsofinancial.net. When we come back, we're going to take some time to talk about goals since it is a new year, and we do believe very strongly that you have to set goals for your finances as well as any other things that you want to accomplish. So we're going to talk a bit about that, as well as taxes, as we explained.
Yay.
And then, Tom's all excited because we finally said he can talk taxes.
Yes.
And then we'll have a couple guests at the top of the hour to help talk about a topic on most parents' mind at this time. So, again, give us a call, 580-KIDO. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petso, who is taking a very well-deserved little mini long weekend. So we're obviously taking phone calls. And before we get into anything else, we're going to jump right over to the phones and talk to Mike. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Jennifer and Tom.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I have a tax concept I'd like to run by you.
Perfect. We got the guy for you.
Maybe.
Okay. We'll talk with round numbers. I'm filing single and currently at about $38K, you pay zero tax on dividends and long-term capital gains, correct?
Right.
Okay. And if a person wanted to live on, so say a person's living on their retirement accounts now, no earned income,
mm-hmm.
if you were to take, get up to the 38K on your adjusted gross income, and then you wanted to live on 50, could you take the 12K from a Roth account, and so you'd be living on 50 and being taxed at 38?
Yes. And okay. Remember, that's 38,000 adjusted gross. That's before you take your standard deduction and so forth. So
okay, so tax, before but, the before the 12K, currently the
right,
12K deduction.
Right. Mm-hmm. And remember on that how you calculate that to get the 0% on the capital gains or investment income. You have to add that in, although to get to the taxable income amount, the 38,000. Okay, that mm-hmm. includes, that isn't just your income. That also includes all that income that as a gross figure to taxable income before you qualify for that. So a lot of people think, well, I made 38,000 on my W-2, then I have this dividend and capital gains, and that isn't included, but you have to include that in the calculation.
Right, it'd be essentially all sources of income. So if you took,
right.
round numbers again, 30K from your retirement account, you earned 8K in your dividends and long-term capital gains, then you'd be at that
right.
38 for your AGI.
Exactly. And just like you said, Roth IRA distribution does not count toward that, what is called modified adjusted gross income. Mm-hmm. You don't have to add it back in.
Well, that would work well, because then a person can kind of be living on more than they're taxed on, and then
right.
sneaking under the level to get taxed on your capital gains if you had some brokerage account type mutual funds or something mm-hmm. which were paying off that way.
Exactly. And also, that's why Roth IRAs is such a great account. But also, if someone is taking Social Security,
mm-hmm.
then the Roth IRA distributions don't count toward income causing the Social Security to be taxable. So Roth IRAs are really a great tool in a lot of different ways for that. So it's a good question.
Right. It kind of gives you diversified forms of income
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just diversified holdings in a sense.
Yeah. Yes. It's called tax diversification. You're exactly right.
Yeah, and it's super important. A lot of people just work and they defer into their 401k, which a lot of 401ks actually have the Roth option now. So people should
right.
check on that just to get a diversified tax buckets when you get to retirement.
Yeah, that's what I'm currently doing is
good.
Part into each side. And so then I have that tax diversification. In
yep.
the long haul.
That's perfect. Good idea.
Okay. One other short add-on. In the Roth holdings, how do you feel about putting you're prone to more risk but more gain, say the REITs and small cap side on the Roth holdings, and your bonds and, let's say, large cap on your 401k, you know, the pre-tax side?
Well, there's two different camps on that. It depends on what kind of investor you are, but you get all the capital gains tax-free if you get in the Roth. But I have read, and there are some people that make the case that for bond interest, because it is taxed at full ordinary income rates, that if you keep those, or you mentioned REITs, you put those in the Roth, then you get that income tax-free in the Roth. So I think it more depends upon your situation and your investment thoughts than just that, but I have heard a lot of people put REITs inside the Roths.
But inside the 401k,
oh, you
of
inside,
course.
Said inside the,
yes.
I might have misunderstood
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
So it's both of them are deferred. It's just that later on you will pay tax. I think also you need to sit down and decide what your goal is with the funds, because a lot of times
uh-huh.
every calculator in the world is going to overweight you in bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggle with that a lot. So does our office on putting too much in a sector that doesn't have much potential for growth. Probably
right.
next to no potential for growth and doesn't yield very much right now. So the rest of your
right.
portfolio to get a nice return has to compensate for an extremely, I don't know, not good sector right now. I mean, there are times when bonds make a lot of sense for people, but it can't just be the canned answer of your age minus whatever
yeah.
is
yeah.
how much you
right.
should have in bonds.
120 minus yeah. your age. Yeah.
I think when you're contributing and you're starting out, especially, you should be doing mostly equities almost through your entire investing career. So
right.
look at that as well and get a good diversified portfolio. I like the idea of overweighting the equity side on Roth, but inside of most of the 401ks that we help guide people on, we do try to balance that so that they're getting good growth in both sides, and also that they're not overly doing bonds in any one area.
Right. Yeah, I look at the bonds as basically as capital preservation as opposed to income, in a sense. Just so let's say half of my holdings are at least stable, and then when the market bounces around, at least something stays pretty stable.
Well, that's kind of the age-old thought process. But right now, bonds, and with interest rates going up and bond yields are so low, it is a sector that doesn't really show much opportunity for growth. And it may not go down as much, but it's still, when interest rates go up, it'll go down. So in a market that's going up, you're going to have
money.
A big percentage of your portfolio that isn't going to be doing anything.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And so it's, you know, protecting on the downside, especially when we're trying to grow our money, trying to protect the downside really becomes a governor on your account, because you're artificially restricting how much it can grow. And in this case, if you're trying to really build as much as you can, I would say, like Jennifer was saying, go more equities. Don't worry so much the downside, because the downside is where we make a lot of our money long term.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't allow some of our portfolio to go down so we can take advantage of those downs, then you've kind of restricted what the potential is.
And as well,
right.
As people sometimes get so concerned about preservation, they don't look at the interest rate side of it. And if rates go up, bonds go down. That was one of the things that we were most concerned about on a risk basis for a lot of our retirees and people that assume that won't happen. And then they get a shock that their bond portfolio is down 10%. And it's like, well, bonds can go down as well. So we have to make sure that when we're looking at this, we're looking at it properly. And as Tom was saying, 401k dollar cost averaging is a wonderful gift. I mean, if you don't even have a chance to get things on sale, if you're too conservative, of course, you should always talk to someone, because we're kind of giving you very
broad
advice without knowing more
Correct.
About you. But when we look at things, we just want to look at all the players in the game and find out which position is best for each player and how much time they should get. So that's how we look at the bond portfolio. Are they a good player at this time? How much time do we want them to get? So we're looking at it all the time, okay?
Right. Yeah, I'm about 12, 14 months from being able to draw on my retirement account. So that's why I'm starting to preserve a little bit of it.
Well, also remember on that, that's a really good point. The one thing to consider is that unless you have a major health concern, you have to think that you need to grow your money for a lot longer than people did 40 years ago, 30 years ago. So you're probably going to live in retirement 30 or 40 years. So if you were to someone I sat down and you're going to start investing and said, hey, I got my investment time horizon is 30 years, then what would you invest in? You go, well, I can invest in stocks and so forth, because you have to have that money outlive beat inflation over time, and you need to keep it going. So trying to use retirement as some sort of end result is probably obsolete, because what we have to do is look through that and understand that retirement is just a transition point to a lifestyle change. It shouldn't be a transition point or an end result of an investment plan, because you need that money to continue to grow for the rest of your life to maintain your lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, basically, like you said, you have 30 plus years that, let's say, without earned income, W-2 form, so you've got to make a big chunk of that last for a long time.
Right.
And forever.
Yeah.
You can't, we, you know, a lot of people go, so in this conversation we're having, how long are you figuring I'm going to live? And we go, perpetually, because we never know when you're going to die. If you have that set, you know, you're going to do a Thelma and Louise type of thing, and you have that set in your mind that at 70 or 80 you're going off a cliff, then we can invest around that. But other than that, it's perpetual, and we have to consider that you're going to live for a long period of time, and your money has to last.
So
yeah, you don't. It's not as if when you retire, you cash it all out.
No,
and it all,
exactly. No. It's not an end point. It's just a transition point where you got to start drawing off of it. So you absolutely need it to grow.
Exactly.
All right. All right, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for the call. Have a wonderful weekend.
You do the same. Thank
all right,
you.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right. So again, phone calls 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or email jstone@petsofinancial.net. So we're going to dive into real quick, now that it's the first of the year, setting some financial goals along with any other type of goal. When we meet with our clients at the first of the year, the first thing we want to find out on our retirees that are drawing income is what their goals are for the year and if they can increase the income, if they need to increase their income, and we start working on their plan. So every year is almost a transition point for them as well. Some don't need anything different. Others, we do. If you're just starting out and you have a new 401k or you're starting to invest, what is your goal for that money? What are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to retire early? Are you trying to, you know, just stick away a little bit of money because you have a pension? What are you aiming for this year going forward? It's really easy, and we like to pick on Tom because he's a real easy target, but we all set.
That isn't very
it
nice.
It is. You're very easy because you take it so well.
Well, that's
better. That's what we're saying. So every January, or at least for the last couple of years, he starts the Whole 30 plan. So
just for 2 years. This is only the second year. It isn't like it's 10 years straight.
Yeah. So he knocks it out of the park for the first month. And then he slacks a little. And then towards the end of the year, he's eating all the candy in the office.
Yeah, and then it's Christmas time and I'm whole hog.
Yeah. Right. But then he does it again. And he doesn't ever quit. He just resets and says, you know what? I'm going to do this again. And then this year, it'll probably stretch all through February. And maybe he won't start eating candy until the end of December.
Now she's really laid down the gauntlet. I'm going to push through just because she said that.
So we all have these things that we start and we set mental targets. It's not like he put it in writing and set a challenge with us. I think he and another gal in our office were challenging each other last year.
Last year.
Erica. So it's good when we do that. I mean, it's nice to keep each other accountable. So sometimes having that person you go to the gym with every week or every evening or whatever it might be, those kind of things help you to keep on task. That's part of our job. When we meet with people is to help set a goal and then make sure that you're staying on track. Of course, you're going to stop sometimes and have to reset. That's nothing to be ashamed of or worried about. We all do. So if you say this year, I'm going to create a budget and I'm going to use the envelope system. I'm going to use the plan that we like, which is a 70-20-10 plan, whatever it might be. And you're going to stick with that budget. Well, if you make it for the first 2 months and then you don't do so well the third month, don't quit. Just reset it.
Right. Don't get down on yourself because you got off track. The worst thing that people do is I think they throw up their hands and go, well, I screwed up again. I'm done. I might as well go to McDonald's. What the heck? And so forth. So I always see this as on financial goals, it's always good to make it something that you're an activity, not an end result. Because if you go, I'm going to have $50,000 in my 401k at the end of the year, well, the market has control over that too. But you can say, I'm going to increase my contributions to my 401k up to 10% this year. That's a good goal. That's something that you can do. You have complete control over. And so those little things, I try to get people, if anything, increase what they're putting in at least 1% for the year. Make sure you're getting the match if you're not getting the match. Those kind of things are substantial things that can pay off long term.
Yeah. And if you're working with someone and you say, because what we do, we are financial planners. So, of course, we like to create plans. But if you have someone that says they want to retire at 50, well, sit down with them and say, what does retiring at 50 look like for you? Just because you want to do something. Well, 50 is really young for a lot of us. And even if you have a pension and you're able to fund your retirement because it's taking care of your base income, look at the numbers and say, okay, so pensions never replace 100% of your income. If you have more time on your hands, are you going to spend more or are you going to spend less? So how are you going to offset and have enough set aside that you can live on it? So those are things too, that if you want to make this and you say, this is my goal, I want to retire early or I want to do something, then make sure you can do this well and you don't get disappointed the first couple years of retirement when you're out of money and you can't do anything.
Right. Or you find out that you really did kind of liked your job and now you find out you have all this time on your hands and you're not doing anything.
Right.
We were talking about getting ready for this yesterday or day before, and we were talking about how we think for the human being human spirit, it's important to work. It's important to have something to get up and do. And for just to stop doing that just because you feel like, hey, I'm successful if I retire when I'm 50, and you're patting yourself on the back because you're able maybe to pull that off, doesn't mean that you should. You know, the old saying is just because you can doesn't mean you should. And you really need to think those things through. What is your life going to look like after that fact?
And you need to retire to something, not from something. So if your job's not your thing you want to do for the rest of your life, you're burned out, you want to transition, what does that look like? I mean, you can always retire to a different position, a lower stress job, something different, but having purpose, we found, is so super important for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to start touching on taxes. And then hopefully our guests will be able to be here and we can start talking a little bit about a very important topic.
Yes.
208-580-KIDO. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown filling in for Dave Pezzo this morning. He is on a very well-deserved long vacation, or I guess long weekend. It's not really a long vacation, but we always appreciate being here and we appreciate the calls and all of you that listen every week. If you do have a question, please call us at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. All right. The hours go so quickly, so we're going to jump into, I think, what's a topic on everyone's mind right now, and that is the tax changes for this year. From what we've seen, most people will benefit quite a bit from it. As much as we want to say there's nothing good that's come out of whatever, this tax cuts are very nice. Most of the tax brackets have come down about 3% from what we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
So to us, when we look at that and we say most people will pay a little bit less, it's simplified.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tom, explain to us a little bit. I mean, the reduction in the tax rates, how did that break down?
Well, so it's like the 10% stayed the same. So the lowest tax bracket is 10%, and it's still 10%. Before, the next tax bracket was 15, and it's now 12. The one before was 25, now it's 22. So all of them pretty much just shifted down 3%. Except for the highest tax bracket, which only went down 2.6% from 39.6 to 37%. So,
but everyone pretty much across the board got a little bit of a break other than the high income.
Yeah, which got a little less. Right?
Correct.
Got a little less of a cut, which is funny because you don't hear that from socialist, social media.
Correct. I think the biggest question and the most, what we've spent a lot of time on is the deduction. Because, and we'll talk a bit about this more, but I think we can spend a good chunk on it right now, is standard deduction versus itemizing. Everyone says, I can no longer itemize, so they think they're not getting a benefit. But the standard deduction doubling tends to sometimes be better than when people itemized. Is that correct?
That is correct. So a lot of people were itemizing, you know, and itemizing is your property taxes, your state income taxes, for most people, some medical expenses if you had
charities,
substantial amounts, charitable donations, mortgage interest, and property taxes. There are quite a few others than that, but those are the main ones that most people were using. Because standard deductions have basically doubled, most people won't have enough to itemize. They won't have enough to be higher than the standard deduction. So therefore, I've read several articles about what they think, but most likely, 65%, I believe, of people that were itemizing will be taking the standard deduction this year. It's pretty substantial.
Yeah, which isn't a bad thing.
No, it's
because
a good thing.
They actually will get maybe a bigger deduction even than before.
Right.
The thing that's gotten people thrown a bit, though, is on the charitable side. So if you are over the age of 70 and a half, which means you are required to take distributions from your IRA, those distributions up to $100,000 can be directed to a charity, and you are not taxed on that.
As long as you're over 70 and a half.
Yes.
You have to be required RMD age.
So that is a huge thing that you need to talk to any planners that you're working about and saying to them, especially if you have a high required distribution that tends to be growing and you're paying a lot of tax on that. If you can direct part of that distribution to your charities because you're going to donate anyways, then that will help reduce your taxable income.
Right. And in some cases, it doesn't have to be substantial. It could be that part of that RMD was causing part of your Social Security to be taxable. You don't need the money. That's one thing. If you need the money, then that's one thing. But if you're just taking the RMD because they're forcing you to, you could direct it, and then it doesn't cause your Social Security or part of your Social Security to be taxable. Right. So,
and you're still doing what you want to do.
I mean,
most people do want to gift in some way, so gifting that direction is very good.
But maybe you always do give into charity now. Now you can get a tax benefit from it instead of now with the new standard deduction.
Losing
it basically isn't giving you any benefit tax wise.
Right. So, of course, giving is always great, but if you want to do it in a taxable or a way that's better tax wise, that's one direction to go. All right, we can hear the music. That means that we are out of the top of the hour and we will be back in the next hour, and we're going to talk about, we'll give you a little bit of a tip here, more on taxes, but then a little bit on education. Give us a call, 580-KIDO. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are filling in today for Dave Petso. Thank you for letting us do this, Dave. We do really enjoy our time, and even though we only do it every few months, we do really enjoy getting together and doing this. So phone calls are always welcome. We've only gotten two, which is unusual for us. Usually we have a few more than that. Maybe everybody's enjoying the long weekend. Phone number is 580-KIDO, 580-5436. We're going to jump right back into some tax questions right now that I have for Tom, just to clarify some point for, you know, general, what we get asked a lot about. And then hopefully, unfortunately, our guest had a little car issue this morning. So they're on their way, but they're not here yet. But when they get here, we're going to jump right into talking with them. And it's about college planning and experience with college and things along those lines. So once they get here, we will talk with them. So, Tom, I have a question, because a lot of times people say, with the no personal exemptions any longer, that if you have children, you're going to lose a lot and end up paying a lot more in taxes. Explain what happened on that piece of it.
So forever, you know, it was the age-old thing. Can I claim somebody? Can I not claim somebody? And so you could get a personal exemption on your taxes, and as of last year, it was $4,100. So for everybody, you could claim yourself, your spouse, any of your kids up to a certain age and so situation. You could claim and reduce your taxes on top of that. And that's the misnomer on the standard deduction, is everybody thinks, oh, my standard deduction doubled, so therefore I'm going to have another basically $12,000 of a deduction if I'm married, filing jointly. But when you, because we're not going to get that personal exemption anymore, that's gone, then that $4,100 per person deduction is gone too. So if you were married, filing jointly, and you were getting, and it was a little bit more than this, but let's say a $12,000 standard deduction and then the $8,000 of personal exemptions, your total tax deduction for those two things was a little over $20,000. Now, that just goes up to $24,000. So it's really important to know that you just didn't get a huge tax, you know, reduction taxes. It's actually the offset. And for some people, depending upon who they're claiming, it could be less. But if you have kids that are less than, or they're 16 or younger, then you get up to a $2,000 child tax credit. And that is a straight credit against your taxes. It's a lot better than a deduction. And so on that, you get, instead of last year, you would have got $1,000 for those kids. You're now getting $2,000. So in essence, that's a tax benefit for a lot of people if their kids are 16 or less.
And again, that phases out at higher income rates, correct?
Right. Yeah, it used to be really low, like just over $100,000, it'd start phasing out for even married filing jointly. Now that's clear up to $400,000. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be quite a few people that were higher income that have younger kids that weren't getting any tax credit at all. Now all of a sudden they're going to get this $2,000 tax credit for both, for all those kids. And I'm saying per child.
Yeah. And the interesting thing that people always need to understand is the difference between a deduction and a credit. Right. Sometimes those words get interchangeable, and they're really not. A deduction reduces the amount of your income that becomes taxable.
Right.
A credit, actually, if you owed $1,000 in taxes and you got a $1,000 tax credit, would wipe out your tax bill.
Right. So it's a dollar for dollar. A credit is a dollar for dollar reduction of tax. And so the credits are a lot more powerful than the deduction. So dependent, but on the flip side of that, if you had a child that was, let's say, 19, but still living at home, and they're not going to college, they're not going at least half time to college, you can now get a $500 credit for them, but that's it. There isn't anything, you don't get any other tax benefit for that. And if they're working part time and they're making over their standard deduction, then you can't claim them at all. So it really pays to make sure those kids go to school.
In a lot of ways, right?
Right.
So to me, when you look at all this, it seems that this year will be a bit confusing for people, just because there's so many changes. And with changes and uncertainty becomes confusion, and then people want more help. Mm-hmm. But it almost feels like with the simplifying of the tax code, which we've all wanted for so very long, that people are going to need, unfortunately, people like you a little less.
Yeah. I mean, in essence, for basic people that are just out there working and not much, and just maybe a couple kids or whatever, there it's going to get really simple. I mean, mm-hmm. basically, your income minus $24,000 or $12,000, and that's it. That's mm-hmm. your taxable income. And then, you know, if you use TurboTax or one of those, he'll factor in if you get the credits, push the button, you're done. And fortunately or unfortunately, depending upon what your profession is, it's probably a good thing.
You know, but there's always something from the comfort of having somebody that does this all day long, look over the numbers and just make sure they're correct. I mean, it does get complicated. There's a lot that we wanted to cover on the self-employed side, and we're a bit concerned that it might get into the weeds.
Right.
But we're going to, I mean, just touch on it briefly just mm-hmm. because it's super important. If you're self-employed, you now have the ability to have, what, a 20%
deduction of your income. And one
but
thing,
that's net income, correct?
That's net income. That's your profit after your expenses. Mm-hmm. It reduces your income. Now, that's an important thing for people that have been self-employed for a while. That does not have anything to do with reducing your self-employment tax. It just reduces your income tax, your taxable income. So it is a great opportunity. It's certainly awesome, but it isn't you need to make sure that you understand how that's going to work. Now, the software I use, you know, it automatically figures that in. If you're doing your taxes by hand, I shudder to think that someone does them by hand still. But if you do, then there's going to be a lot more forms that you're going to have to do, supplemental forms and stuff mm-hmm. you're going to have to do, and it's going to be quite confusing. So that qualified business income deduction is a big deal, mm-hmm. but you need to really educate yourself if you're going to do them yourself.
Yeah, and then there was something that we were just talking about this morning, and this is where it gets a little confusing and we need more time to talk about it, but statutory employees.
Right.
So there's some on the W-2, sometimes you've got the ability to deduct some of your income or use the deduction against some of your income for that as well.
Right. So statutory employee is basically someone that a good example of would be a traveling salesman. They're on the road all the time. They, you know, are incurring a lot of expenses on their own. Right now, one of the big changes this year is that the unreimbursed employee expenses have gone away. So on your Schedule A, where you used to be able to write off, you know, mileage and so forth, if you were an employee that was spending a lot of money on your own, those deductions have completely gone away. So if you can get classified as a statutory employee, therefore you can still be paid by a W-2. You're still paid as a W-2 through the payroll system. But you don't pay self-employment tax, and you can write off all your expenses on a small business tax form called the Schedule C. So if you can qualify as a statutory employee, not everybody would. But if it's possible, then that could be a big deal, because it looks like the statutory employees will be able to also participate in getting this 20% deduction in their income. So if you're a traveling salesman or you do a lot of work that you incur a lot of expenses on your own for the work you do, then it might be something you want to talk to your employer to see if you can get classified as a statutory employee.
All right. Now, another thing this year that's quite good that we have been wanting for a very long time is an increase in what you can contribute to retirement plans. It's been a long time since they actually had it elevated. So yeah, Ross now, it's been lots of time.
5 years.
Yeah.
Five, six years.
So they have increased 401ks. They have not increased other plans. So Roth IRAs, they've actually increased that limit from 5,500 to 6,000. And if you're over 50, you get a lovely catch-up of $1,000, so that brings it up to $7,000. Simple IRAs went up to $13,000
right.
from $12,500. So what this is allowing you to do is put more money away, and your 401k limit also went up to $19,000 this year. And if you're over 50, the wonderful thing about getting older and older is you can save more and more. Mm-hmm. So another good thing, when Tom hit 50, he was all celebrating because he could save more money.
Yeah, that was
the
so
biggest
excited.
Thing. Yep, absolutely. Yep,
couldn't wait.
Yeah. All right. So we have just had our two guests show up. Unfortunately, they had a bit of a car issue this morning. So when we come back from the break, we're going to introduce them. They are two students that have been going to college. Now, one is in her last semester. The other one is starting his senior year. Or no, wait, he's in his third semester away from being able to graduate, but his story is quite interesting. So anyways, when we get back, we're going to talk with them and tell us a little bit about what they felt the best and the worst decisions they've made, and just ask them everything we can think of. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll start on the college planning. 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown filling in for Dave Petzo this weekend. He is off enjoying a well-deserved vacation, so we are covering for him. Phone number 580-KIDO, 580-5436. We are going to jump right into our special guests. We have two here today, JC, who is a student at Boise State, and she is in her last semester, and Brennan, who is a junior at West Point. So these two actually were guests 3 years ago, I believe it was, when Brennan first decided to go to West Point and JC was in her first year at Boise State. So first of all, I want to congratulate them both because you've stuck it out. JC is so close to being done and Brennan has committed his life. So it's a great thing. They've accomplished so much. So I'm very proud of both of them. Tom here, he's very much a military history buff. So mm-hmm. when he heard that he got to ask Brennan some questions about his experience at West Point, he was super excited to do that. So we're going to kind of balance these questions out with his experience, JC's experience at Boise State, what they've taken from it, as well as what they might think about doing slightly differently. But my first question, because they always talk about Idaho and it's what they call the go-on rate. How many kids go on from high school to college? Well, that's great. But then I want to know from your experience with your friends, because of course you don't know those numbers off the top of your head, but how many of your friends that started college are still in and you think they're going to graduate, or how many of them have decided to go off and join the workforce? What do you think, JC, first I'll ask you, what are your feelings? Have most of your friends stayed in school?
I think a lot of my friends have stayed in school, but they've taken either a different approach to school, like in their CNA, going to like cosmetology school, something along those lines, versus traditional four-year plan. I would say most of the time it either takes more than 4 years or they decide to go an alternative route. It's about half and half, I'd say, between those.
Okay. How about you, Brennan? Most of your friends still in school?
Yeah, most of my friends are all in school. A lot of my friends have a little bit different background than JC. A lot of them went to college to play sports or whatever. So they came on scholarships. And so from my experience, yeah, most of them are still, you know, going strong.
Good. That's very encouraging, I think. Yeah. Financially, a lot of kids come out of school with a lot of financial debt. So that discourages some people to go on. With you two, I know it's quite different. JC has, most of hers has been covered with help from parents. This last semester, I know she's taking that on herself. Brennan, I understand yours is mostly covered because of your commitment.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think that's very helpful for you two. Do you think your friends are nervous about debt that they're taking on, or do you think they just feel like it's part of what you do now?
I think it's pretty much part of what you do. I mean, like, to be scared of debt just to go to college, I think is not worth it these days. Debt is part of the process, but there's also so many scholarships available that it's nothing to worry about, because if you're dedicated and you're committed to making sure you save money, you can go out there and find scholarships without even having to worry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that just from what I've seen, a lot of my friends have taken on debt. I think that it's just a part of what you do now to go to school. And I do think that scares some people. I know people who are taking a credit here, a credit there, just because they can't afford to take on that debt. So they want to make sure they're saving their money in order to pay it off right away, which I think is a decent approach, but I also think it makes it prolonged in getting a return on your education. Basically, you can't get that job you want if you don't get your degree quicker. Mm-hmm. So I think there's importance in finding a balance, but I think that's why a lot of people choose to go to Boise State and stay in state versus going to an expensive university out of state.
Good.
So do you think that kids that are taking on student loans, and maybe this isn't so much to your friends or yourself, but in general, someone that's in their early 20s, really can visualize, or really it means what it really means to have, let's say, $80,000 in debt. You know, what that really means. Is it so big that you just go, I can't even conceptualize that, so it doesn't seem real?
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, like, for us as young adults, young kids, I mean, being honest, like, anything over $50,000 is just, almost unimaginable. You know, it's more money than we've ever made in our lifetimes, right? And so it seems like you're not going to pay it off ever, and it scares you. But I think in general, you just have to be comfortable and relax and look at the big picture. I mean, eventually your college education will pay off. You'll get a return, and you'll be able to make back that money and pay it off.
Do you think kids are looking at their majors as, you know, what that return will be? Are they looking at it and saying, you know, I can get a job at this amount? So, I mean, you know, the old age-old thing of going, it would be like a engineer, okay? He's going to start at $100,000, probably going to be a good return. But some people, I'm going to be an English literature major, right? And I'm going to get paid, you know, starting at $25,000. Is it really, are they really looking at that and going, hey, you know, if I had picked a major that isn't really going to pay very much, is this really going to be as good a return? And I'm going to have $50,000-$60,000 of student loans, but they're still going, hey, but this is what I really like, instead of maybe I should get a job that pays, you know, that pays decent, and then I can live out my passion on the outside.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case for a lot of people. I have kind of a unique experience because at West Point, with the military commitment after, they kind of encourage us to really pick whatever major makes you happy. So, you know, pick what you're interested in and then study it. And then because you're automatically in the military afterwards, after you graduate, then it really doesn't matter what you major in until you get out. And some people stay in for a whole career, a whole lifetime. So for them, their major was just a good experience. And so I would say that a lot of people in general, like a lot of my friends and stuff, they will focus more on like a business degree or a finance, or, you know, really pushing towards something that they think will make money in the future. Whether I agree with that or not, I don't know. You know, it depends on what you're interested in. I don't think you should waste time on things you're not interested in, but I do think it's important to also focus on things that will make money. I mean, you have to be realistic. You got to make money to survive.
Right. So one of the things we were talking about, because we will need to take a break here at the bottom of the hour, is with JC, when you went to school, the one thing that was super important, because obviously I know your parents very well, super important to them was to make sure that they saved for your education. We felt that it was super important for you to have some skin in the game. So when they started to do this and they set aside money, it was almost from the day you were born that they started putting money away, so that when you went to school, it could be paid for. So it was a plan. It was deliberately done. It was something that was super important. And I might as well just come out and really say this. She is my daughter. So this was super important to us. Yeah. So I'm very, very aware of her situation. But we also felt that at some point there was, she needed to have a little more skin in the game. And she agreed. She wanted to be responsible for part of the paying of the bill. So she's taking that on, and she's done it all on her own. And she works two jobs, and she's super hard and dedicated to getting done in 4 years. So she was able to accomplish this with a plan. So that's what Tom and I go back to. His daughter's actually starting college this year too, and she is in her first year. And they have a plan to pay for it. And that's what we talk about. Because most people, when they have kids, don't say, we hope they figure it out. They really want to give them a good, solid plan to start out. And then you have exceptional people like Brennan, who is very smart and very dedicated as well. So you have two different people here that are very focused on what they're going to do in the future, very mature and planning out their future already. So that's important as well. So we're going to take our first break, or I guess our second break of this hour. When we come back, we're going to ask them a few more detailed questions about their experience. And if you have questions for them, I'm sure they'd be willing to answer them. 580-5436. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Phone number is 580-KIDO 580-5436. Or you can email me at jstone@petzofinancial.net. Our guests right now that are talking about their college experience are JC and Brennan, and they're both quite different in their approaches to going on and furthering their education. JC's a senior at Boise State. Brennan's a junior at West Point. We have some, I guess my first question, I'm going to go to JC first, because I know Tom is chomping at the bit to ask some more questions about West Point.
I haven't got a chance yet.
I know. So I'm going to ask JC first. I'm curious to know what your career aspirations are after you're done with school.
A tough question, and not everyone asked me. I think when I went into college, I never thought I'd be the person who didn't have like a set plan as career-wise after school. I always thought that I'd, you know, go to school, know exactly what I wanted to do, get a job, the traditional route. But I think the more I went through school, the more I was like, you know, I'm 20 years old. Picking a career right now is such a big choice. And so with that in mind, when I made my final major declaration, I decided to get a degree in business administration, which is basically just general business. So I've taken classes in accounting, finance, econ, HRM. So I have a very wide span of, I guess, education in those courses, which is really helpful, I think, to me, because it opens so many doors and so many opportunities. So as of now, I think I do want to go into a job that kind of focuses on human resource management, because those are the classes I found myself sitting in and going, you know what, I actually enjoy this. I want to hear what my professor has to say. I want to hear about his experiences. And I found myself super almost invested in just their experiences. And so that made me go, you know what, this is probably the direction I want to head in. So no, not a specific career, but I do know a direction now, which is super exciting. And I think it's helping me get through this last semester because I know there's finally an end goal in sight.
Perfect. So if, as you're starting off at any college, but I'm just going to say Boise State because that's where you're at, what is the biggest tip you would give to people starting out? I know that you and I and your father talked a lot about the planning part of it and going and talking to counselors and laying out the coursework. So to make sure that you didn't miss something and then end up this semester with having to take extra classes that you weren't ready for, what do you think is the most important thing to focus on as you plan that all out?
I would just say really do your research. I think talking to counselors is super helpful, but do some research on your own. You're going to find that there are classes that you could take instead of this class per se. Maybe that's more interesting to you, but my biggest advice would just be plan it out yourself and then go in and have them double check and get their advice afterwards. I think doing the research on your own is super helpful because you know what your options are and you know what you could do instead of, let's say you could take this class instead of this class. It's just helpful to do it on your own, I think, and then have someone double check you in the end.
Perfect. And again, isn't it funny how everything in life goes back to having a plan?
It is.
And documenting it and looking at it. I know it sounds like we preach about that constantly, but I can't think of one aspect of your life that doesn't have a plan that you need to put together and follow.
Well, I think it's almost comforting to have a plan and knowing that you took those steps to get yourself there. And then I think it's almost so much more rewarding because you're like, yeah, like I did this. Like, sure, someone helped me. Someone backed me up, but you did it on your own and you took a good portion of time to make sure you were taking these steps to get where you needed. And I think that plans may sound silly, but they're so important in everything you do. So
Absolutely. All right, Tom, I know you have some questions.
Well, I do. But one thing I wanted to comment on that, because my daughter is in college and what the experiences she experienced in her first semester. And I know I've known JC for about 14 years.
Yeah,
at least.
is that I know that she's able to be independent. And I think that that is a huge thing about this is it would be a crime if she went through this or my daughter goes through this or anybody to go through that experience and live the experiences to educate yourself and get and not have the experience that you can go out and be able to rent an apartment on yourself own and buy a car on your own and do things on your own and manage yourself instead of coming out and going, well, I've already relied on my parents and I don't, and I have no idea how to do my own laundry.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, that is our main focus as parents is to, is to raise competent adults.
Kind, and, compassionate, and
responsible. Yeah. And like my mom said, my mom always said we had four kids and none of them went to prison. So
there you go. Well, that's an accomplishment, right? Yeah.
So so I think that's great. And I think JC's going to be very successful in her life because she is able to do things on her own and she's
And
very
he still thinks you should be an accountant.
I still think
she should. We just talked about that on Friday and he said she's just got the attitude and the aptitude. This is her focus.
There's an accountant in there. She just
Tom's going to be beaming if that happens.
Yeah.
See, that I can say I was right.
Yeah.
He will to be right.
Tell me every time he sees me.
So as far as West Point, I know a lot about West Point just from history. I think a lot of people don't realize how West Point's been around like for centuries. You know, in the Revolutionary War, it was a fort, correct?
Yeah, it's currently it's the longest actively manned fort in the U.S. So, it's been there forever.
Right, so it is still manned. It is still a active fort.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they consider it actively manned just because the cadets are there right now. I mean, since we're just going to school, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, it's not super technically manned, but yeah, we're there, so it's fun.
So being that you're going to a school that is basically a historical monument. What is that like? What is a day like at West Point?
It's pretty amazing being there, honestly. You know, in general, people would want to say, like, how hard it is and talk about, like, the things that suck. But I like to really focus on the things that are good about it. Like, I mean, I wake up in the morning, I have formation, I have breakfast with my friends, then I go to a couple of classes, and then, you know, like a lunch, and then a couple more classes after lunch, and then we're all part of some sort of club or sport, depending on whether you're a D1 athlete or a part of a club team. And then so you go to your sport at around 4, and then dinner, and then homework till, you know, 10 midnight, and then repeat. You know, it's nothing crazy, but it is what it is. And I love school, and I love learning. So for me, it's not a bad experience, you know.
So do you have to wear a uniform all the time? Is it, there's no casual dress during the regular days?
Yeah, so for the most part, it depends on your class. There's a little bit different privileges based off whether you're a freshman or a senior. But for the most part, like especially a rule that just changes here is that you have to wear a uniform even when you go, even when we go eat in the mess hall. So for everybody, they're pretty much in a uniform from, you know, 5, 6 a.m. until dinner, so about 6, 7. So, it's a long day.
So, obviously, watched numerous Army movies and war movies. So, do you still have, like, people come in doing inspections on your room?
Oh, yeah. We have lots of inspections. My friends were just telling me they had a big inspection last week. Our favorite Saturday morning inspection called Sammy. And, you know, they wake up, you got PT, physical training in the morning, and then after you're all sweaty and gross, then you got to go back to your room and then, you know, change without ruining anything, and everything has to be absolutely perfect. And then I think they changed it this year, and it was like if you have one gig or like one mistake in your room, it's an automatic fail. So it was pretty strict this year. So I don't know. Yeah, it's just like the movies in that aspect for sure. Yeah.
Awesome. What is your military commitment after you get done with your school, or how does that work?
So the great thing about West Point is that it's a free university, you know. But the caveat is the commitment. So it's 5 years active and 3 years reserve. So I graduate in 2020. And I can expect my minimum military-ish commitment will be till 2028, but I could get out of active duty after 5. So I can choose to extend it, and maybe it'd be a couple years or to a career, but it's really not that big of a commitment. 5 years is nothing. I mean, I can do 5 years. I'm getting paid. I have a guaranteed job, and I get free education out of it. So right. For me, it's totally worth it.
And what is your emphasis or major or whatever they would?
Yeah. So my major is economics, and then I have a Russian minor.
Russian minor.
So can you talk about that? Can you talk what you get to do next semester?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I should be at West Point right now. All my friends went back last week or the week before, but because of my Russian minor, I've really focused on Russian because I'm really interested in learning the language. And I applied, and I actually have the opportunity to go abroad this semester. So I'll be studying in Ukraine, everything paid for. I go there next week. I'll be living with a host family, you know, everything you'd imagine. And I'm really excited.
Yeah. But so then, I just got to add one thing. But then when he gets back, because he doesn't get to do any other classes, correct, during that period of time? So you're going to have a case or a study load that's over the top next semester.
Every study abroad program is different. But fortunately for me, going to Ukraine, they don't offer anything except Russian classes. So as an economics major, I have a lot to make up when I get back. I usually average anywhere from 19 to 22 credits, but I'll be a little higher than that, trying to make up for a whole semester so I can graduate.
So everybody out there next fall, right? Yeah, that would be next fall. Pray for Brennan.
Yeah.
So if someone that's someone has a you know, someone they're interested, you know, I was mentioning my son has a West Point picture above his bed and so forth. If they have a, you know, a son or daughter, right, wants to pursue a to go one of the academies, what do you think they should be or what do they need to be doing early? Because it isn't something like you go senior year and go, hey, I think I'm going to go to the academy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I actually decided pretty late that I wanted to apply and go. Granted, it was a great decision. But a lot of my friends have been planning to go since they were babies, pretty much. Like my roommate, my best friend at school, his dad went to West Point. His brother went to West Point. His grandpa, his great-grandpa, and I think his great-great-grandpa. Like, I mean, he's got a whole lineage, so he knew what he was doing and that he was going to go. But I would say in order to prepare, you just have to really be dedicated in school. I mean, for me, I played sports as a kid. You know, I played basketball, football, track. You know, I had a good time doing that, but I was also able to focus in the classroom. And I think that is the thing that made the difference, especially because Idaho isn't a super competitive. As you, for the congressional nominations, in order to get in, it gets really competitive depending on the population, obviously. And so you go to places, California or back east, it's really, really competitive. But Idaho is not that competitive. So if you work hard and get good grades, and it's something you really want, it's not out of reach.
So do they have to have a 4.0 or whatever it is now? Because you can get like 4.5.0s and stuff.
No, yeah. You don't need a 4.0. I had a good GPA, but that's because I cared about school. Like I said, my roommate, who I was just talking about, he didn't have a 4.0. He's from New Mexico. He just worked hard and wanted it and applied and really pushed himself. And I think it's a lot about dedication and what you're willing to put into the application, more so than just the numbers.
So would you say that the West Point is more strict as far as their admissions than the other military? Do you know anything about the other military academies as far as whether some others?
Yeah.
And well, you don't have to slam them.
Well, naturally, I hate Navy, of course. But I don't know in terms of rigor for admissions. I know, I hate to say it, but like I know at least two kids that did not get into the Air Force Academy that chose to come to West Point because they got into West Point. Not saying that like the Air Force Academy is a better school, because they're just different. And I don't think you should really choose the school based off like what you get in, like what you're able to be admitted to, because there's so much more than that. It's you're choosing a branch of service, and it's not just a place to go to school. You know, it's a lot more than that, and you have a commitment after. So I think you really just need to be prepared for what you're getting into.
Yeah. Do we have a break coming up? Pretty soon. You can still go for a little bit. You're still fine.
Okay, this is a question for both of you because I know both of you participate. So, one of our traditions in our family is watching the Army-Navy game. my dad was in the Army in World War II, so I have a little bit of an inclination
for
the Army.
That's good. You want to go there. Yeah. Go Army, right?
So, but I understand, like, when someone watches the Army-Navy game, it isn't like they're watching, you know, Michigan, Notre Dame. It has a different thought, but I'm sure attending the game is a lot more meaningful than watching on TV. What's it like to go to the Army Navy game?
Cold, right, Jace?
It was really cold the year I went. it's pretty cool. They do a lot of stuff to just show the rivalry that's always been there and just make it a big thing. So I would say when you're in there, it's a pretty cool feeling. Like, you just feel so involved in the game, even though you're not playing. There's just this weird sense of like
ceremony.
Patriotism.
Yeah.
You just really want to be there, I guess. Even when it's snowing in like -4 degrees and your hair's frozen. It was still pretty fun.
Yeah,
I mean, recently it's been in Philly, so naturally it gets really cold over there. But it's an experience. I mean, everything from you have the people parachuting in, like the Navy SEALs that do that, and then helicopters flying over. President Trump showed up this year. Like, it's an amazing experience. You
know? So it looks like the cadets are standing the whole game. Are you standing the whole game?
Yep. We stand every game.
Oh, yeah.
Even not just the Army-Navy game. Every home game, we're all required to go to, and so we stand the whole time.
So you're required to go to each game?
Yeah. I love football. I love sports. I played football growing up, but I hate standing for the games. It's exhausting. I feel like we could enjoy the game more if we were sitting. But,
you might wrinkle that gray coat.
I know.
Very good. All right, you guys. We have a few more questions we can get back, but we do need to take a quick break. If you have questions for these two, I know they'd be happy to give you some advice or guidance and just answer those questions as well. Phone number is 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone, Tom Brown filling in for Dave Petzo this weekend. Thank you, Dave, again for letting us fill in for you. It's really fun and I'm really enjoying getting the time to ask some questions to our guests today. JC, who I'm a little partial to because, you know, she is my daughter and she's explaining her experience with college, and Brennan, who I'm also pretty partial to because we like him a lot as well. They kind of belong together anyways. So they were generous enough to get up early this morning when he's on his break to come in and talk with us. So a couple things that we're trying to really focus on is if you have a plan like both of these two young adults do, usually you can accomplish it. JC was set to graduate in 4 years and she's on course. She should be done in May. Brennan is in his junior year at West Point, so he's got a little bit more of a commitment, but he is studying abroad the next semester, so he'll be extremely busy the semester after that. So again, it's the planning and the preparing that they've done that I feel has helped get them to be where they're at and as successful as they are. So, Tom, I know you had a couple more questions for them.
Sure. What was the thing that you before you started college, what you were worried about and considered to be, this is what college is going to be like, and how has that changed now that you're, almost done?
I think when I went into college, I was like, okay, this is going to be kind of like high school. Everyone's going to care about what everyone's doing. You're still going to need to know, like, what's cool to do, dress nice, like, all about meeting people. And I think the more I went through college, I realized, like, people are here for themselves. It's all about the classes, the education. No one really cares what you're doing or if you can find your class on time. You can walk in late. No one's even going to turn and look. Like, they're all focused on the lecture and what you're gaining from the course. It's so individual, I guess, just from what I've seen at Boise State, that it really is all about the school and learning the information that you're going there to get.
Yeah, and you have to really focus on getting it done because there's not as much attention as when you were in high school. You have to get through the class. You have to show up. They're not going to call your parents and say, you're not here today.
Yeah,
you just have to commit to it.
Yeah. And that was also a big shock because when I was in high school, all my teachers would be like, hey, where are you? Like, it was such a personal thing. They knew about your life. They knew about what you were doing after school, who you were hanging out with, all that. In college, it's like, my professors are like, well, you're paying me. So if you want to come, that's great. If you don't, that's your choice too. But you should take information from this class, but if you don't want to, it's your call.
Yeah, I have a little bit different experience there. I mean, if I'm not showing up to class, my tax or first sergeant will be all over me there. But it is pretty different than what I expected. I mean, for me, moving all the way to New York was, crazy in itself. I was born and raised in Meridian, and so I'd never really been out of the valley too much. I'd, traveled for sports and all of that, but I'd never done anything as radical as moving all the way to New York. And so for me, college was, or has been, a great experience. I mean, it's been something different than anything else I've ever done. I go to class, you meet so many new people from all over the world, and so for me, that's just been, the best part of it.
Very good. Well, I know that one thing on JC, I know when I graduated from college, I graduated in finance and with accounting minor. And I know what it's like to go out and you don't have, like, you graduate with a civil engineering degree, you pretty much know what you're going to be, right? Mm-hmm. I really admire you giving yourself the ability to be flexible, because I came out and I didn't know I was going to, there wasn't a finance job.
Right.
You could be a banker, you could be insurance. I tried to sell life insurance, was horrible at it. I I ended up in what I liked, but it took me a long time to get there. It's good. And it's good that you've kind of found a little niche in that you can utilize to focus on. And I know a lot of people have been very successful in human resources, and it's a very good a career. So I think you're going to be very good at that.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
And one other thing, Brennan, you touched on this, and I think it's important that we all acknowledge that you're committing to being a soldier, and we really admire that, and thank you for your service.
Oh, thank you.
And
your
future service and continued service.
Yeah, I just go to school right now, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, but he's going to be, and it's a great accomplishment for both of you. We thank you for spending your early Saturday morning with us, and keep going, and you're almost done. All right, this is Money Matters, and we always like your phone calls. We love talking to you when we're here, and we'll probably be back in a couple months. Yep. Have a great Saturday.
Have fun.